connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hey, what's up? It is October 1989. I am super excited for today in our we're calling this a podded cast. We're hoping that it's going to really catch on.
Yeah. So remind me again the reason why you chose that name.
You see, I was looking at a cast bar from the famous game Final Fantasy, the first one for NES, which came out in 1989, and I definitely looked that up before this, and I'm not bullshitting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, what if you put a pot on it?
Oh, okay, yeah. So you're, like, planting a cast.
Yeah.
So it could become, like, a cast tree or a cast bush?
Well, cast bars were famously taken out in the current year, 2004, with the video game Lost Odyssey for the PlayStation 3, which came out in 2009, which is what it is now.
Yep.
Anyway, welcome to 2020. We're hoping this is going to be a really cool year. Sorry, I completely lost myself. I just happened to get unstuck in time recently, and so I'm keeping track of all the timelines that I'm in.
I see. I understand now. You got abducted by those hand aliens.
Yeah. The handies, they like to call themselves.
Yeah, the handies.
Not the Tralfamadorians, the handies. That's my word for them.
Mm-hmm. Is that their word for them?
So, welcome to NetSurfer Pro.
Yeah, so I understand you've been unstuck in time. Is there anything you, like, find interesting about this? Like, I mean, at the very least, the future must be pretty weird, right?
So here's the thing about being unstuck in time. You can actually only go backwards.
Oh, okay.
See, Slaughterhouse-5 is written after his death. And so, he already experienced all of it. But now I'm currently here going forwards.
So this is the furthest you've been.
Yes.
Okay. And it's like if you were to say, play a video game on a computer that wasn't originally on the... You know what? Let's strike this from the record. Forget I said anything.
Let's strive this from the record.
Shut up.
Okay.
That's not a good segue.
Personally, every step that I take is going to be the furthest I've ever walked from home.
What about that step?
Oh, that step? That was a step back, actually.
Yeah, because you stepped on my foot!
Oh!
That's a step back in our relationship. Okay, so we're deteriorating fast. I think we're both becoming unstuck from time and becoming unstuck from any sense of realistic thought, logical thought.
Yeah, but hey,
we're flailing.
Welcome to NetSurfer Pro, world and ride through the World Wide Web. I am, of course, your co-host, Galen.
And I'm your host, Matthew Marissa, and this is the last episode of Fighting Game Pro.
Yep.
We did the thing again.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure every time we've done a theme month, we've gone over by a week.
Yeah.
If not more.
And I believe specifically the last time we did this, it was in fact April and it went into May as well.
Yeah.
So this is Fighting Maypril or Gmaypril.
Fighting May, because that's what you do in this game.
Yeah.
So.
But before we talk about that, I would like to go into a corner here, if I could.
Ooh.
Maybe not a fact corner. It's more of a fiction corner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call this the analog corner.
Nice.
So there was a series that a friend recommended to me called Angel Hare. Angel, H-A-R-E.
Oh, like a rabbit.
Yes. It is a pretty short series. The whole thing was about 20 minutes. That does not include the 20 minutes of music that they add in afterwards. And I just wanted to briefly talk about it. Now, I did not tell you about this.
Correct. This was sort of a surprise jump scare?
Yes, this was a bit of a jump scare, which is, funnily enough, not something that's actually in the series.
Oh, that's so funny.
So, this is actually a really interesting series. The idea here is there was a show called Angel Hare, and it was sort of like a Veggie Tales, like, Christian programming sort of thing. And the narrator, Jonah, he finds an old VHS, he plays it, And it's like, you know, this cute little character called Gabby Hare, and she comes down to her badger friend named Francis, and she's like, you know, oh, well, we have to have hope, you know, hope in the future. But then he puts in his old recording, and Gabby's like, what's your name? Oh, your name is Jonah? That's a very good name. And it's like, ah, I see. And so, again, I'm going to keep this very brief, partially because one half of us has not watched this.
Yeah.
This is more of just an overview review, an over-review.
What are you doing? I know we're explicit, but we're not that kind of explicit.
Yeah. It's a good thing that this is an audio program, or otherwise I don't want to know what you guys would be viewing right now. So, essentially, this is a really interesting idea. It does not show its hand very early. You get some ideas pretty early on, and then like it builds a lot of tension. I'm going to say Petscop, and I hate that I'm going to say Petscop. It's not a Petscop like, but I'm going to compare it in that it uses a lot of the language of analog horror. But it doesn't really have scares. There's no spooky face. There's not even really like a ghost in the machine sort of thing. It's just it's a really interesting story about this person trying to figure out like, wait, what the hell happened when I was a kid? It's also really interesting because it ties in very well with like nostalgia, because the point is that Jonah ends up trying to actually like get in contact with Gabby Hare again. It is a really interesting little series. I do have to say there's a couple of things I'm not a fan of. For one thing, a lot of the music is kind of like just like a pitch shifted down sort of like song that plays over most of the video. The videos are about 3 minutes long each, and that's not a like terrible thing. Short series can still be very good. But like that's more or less the entire music section, and there comes a point with a lot of, like, analog horror style projects where you kind of have to ask what the meta is supposed to be. And this kind of doesn't really have the, like, meta text to it. It's a lot of the notes are written sort of, like, first person as though, like, Jonah is kind of currently doing the things. Which, maybe that was the intention. I'm not sure. But, you know, I am critical of it because I think that it was a really good idea. I think it was pretty well executed, and I really hope that the creator creates not necessarily more of it, but more stuff like it in the future. I hope that the creator like learns from this, grows, because a lot of craft was on display, and as somebody who watched a lot of things like VeggieTales and ended up having to watch a lot of like, you know, the fun, weird Christian programming from my school, it's pretty spot on. Like, it is a really interesting pastiche of that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's my analog corner review of Angel Hare. Really good series. I would recommend you check it out. It's like 20 minutes.
So, I'm going to give you some lore here about me.
Go ahead.
I remember very vividly going to opening weekend of the St. Louis Mills Mall, which is a mall I'm kind of obsessed with because I had seen its rise and fall in a blaze of glory and Icarus-like hubris.
Yeah, in real time. Life. Yeah.
And just one of the things I remember very vividly about like the first time or so of going there was they had a mall kiosk selling personalized VeggieTales CDs where it would be like It would be the type of thing where it starts the song and then Larry's like, you want to sing along? And then it says your name.
Michael, it's your birthday today.
Yeah. So when you said like the rabbit just said the character's name, I'm like, oh, it's one of those. You went to the kiosk and bought the Jonah version.
Yeah.
Would you like to sing a song with me? Jonah.
didn't the Mills have like a giant like, or not a giant, but like a sign that had Larry and Bob like outside one of the entrances? Or am I completely misremembering that?
You might be misremembering. I'm not sure. You might be thinking of the PBS Kids mascot.
Yeah.
Because it was sponsored by PBS Kids.
Yes. Okay. That's what it was. Yes. Yeah.
Also, I as far as, like, just before we get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, I did want to bring up one thing that I'm a bit of an anime head at times, mainly manga, but when there's a good anime, I'll watch it because, you know, stuff to be said about animation. So I was going to watch the first episode of Oshinoko, which is a manga series that I've caught up on, but I wanted to see the episode because it's, like, currently the top-rated anime of all time.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was an hour and a half episode for the first episode.
Oh, no.
I was like, I understand completely. It goes over, like, so many chapters of the manga in that first episode, and it doesn't waste a moment. But, like, man, nobody told me it was that long of an episode.
Yeah, that's a... It's
a movie. It's, like, more than prestige TV.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing when, like... I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch the next episode of Ted Lasso, and it's an hour long, and I'm like, oh, that is a long episode of TV. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Where does the TV end and the movie begin? It's like, you know, at what point does a TV show stop being a TV show and start being several movies?
I would say that the point that you aren't willing to binge it all the way through in, like, two nights.
Yeah. Or tonight.
Or tonight.
I mean, I didn't even finish that episode of Oshinoko in one night, so...
I mean, that's fair. Look, if it's an hour and a half, it's a YouTube video essay, and you can click away at any point and come back to it. That's my personal view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to video essays way longer than that, though, so...
I mean, yeah. No, that's what I mean, is that an hour and a half is the minimum amount of time where a piece of media can just be easily clicked away from and come back to at a later date. I'm talking movies, I'm talking albums, I'm talking movie albums, I'm talking album-based movies.
Oh yeah, like what Fall Out Boy did for Save Rock and Roll.
Yeah, or what that one J-Rock
Are you talking about Eve?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So, speaking of J-Rock...
Hey, yes, yeah, speaking of J-Rock,
so,
I like it.
Fighting Game May. We have talked about a platform fighter in the form of Rivals of Aether. We talked about a poverty game Kusoge in the form of Ultra Fight Dakyanta 2. Let's talk about a much more normal fighting game this time.
Yes, if there's one word I would use to describe this game, it is normal.
It's at least...
It is a much more traditional fighter.
So,
yes.
So when you think about, like, mainstream fighting games, it's usually Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, maybe Tekken, maybe Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
I feel like those are ones that, like, a lot of people know, especially Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter. Those are the things you see in Family Guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, those games have history is a big part of it. They were part of the arcade boom, and, you know, they have the longevity. They have recognizable characters that have become standards. Like, the Hadouken, as a move, is such a common pop cultural touchstone.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in fucking the Shazam movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, finish him and all that. And Mortal Kombat was a big part of the whole, you know, what is his name? Jack...
Oh, Jack Lieberman.
No.
Oh, no. John Lieberman and Jack... Thompson, I believe.
Yeah. I was like, it's not Jack Johnson. But the sort of anti-video game battle that led to the creation of Ezerb.
Yeah.
So those are the fighting games that are often considered mainstream. And there's sort of a few commonalities between them. Tekken, definitely less so. Tekken and Soul Calibur have some similarities because they're 3D games. But I think Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter are ultimately very similar, despite what people may say.
Yeah.
Like, sure, there's differences in inputs and balancing and, like, animations and character design. But I think the games are similar in that they are 2D, low to the ground, jumping is bad, there's no air blocking, and it's mainly based around spacing.
Yeah.
Like... So much of the game is based on how long your specials reach and how long your normals reach, and how you can bait those out and space them. Also, DPs are good. I mean, I think I would go so far as to say that, like, Capcom is a really notable, one of, like, the big fighting game companies.
Yep.
And NetherRealms is another big one, and Namco is another big one.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say those are three of the main ones, but that's not the entirety of fighting games, and especially nowadays... When it comes to competitive fighting games, there's one company that I think stands pretty much the same level as Capcom. in Namco. NetherRealms is casually popular, but competitively it's not so popular.
Yeah, NetherRealms is kind of a bit of a pocket of its own, which isn't inherently bad. It's more just sort of like, I feel like, yeah, getting into Mortal Kombat and getting into the broader fighting game community are nested, but not inherently the same subject.
Yeah, it's similar to how the Smash community doesn't often overlap with traditional fighters.
Exactly.
The NetherRealms community is its sort of own community.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so what I'm getting to is that Arc Systems Works is one of the biggest names in fighting games that, like, mainstream audiences have not really heard of until recently. So Arc Systems Works, they create what are known as anime fighters. And you might be thinking this is something like Naruto Clash of Ninja or Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm or Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi. And while they have made games that are anime tie-ins, which I will get to in a second, anime fighters as a whole has sort of a different connotation. Because, for one thing, the characters look more anime than Street Fighter characters, which is kind of weird to say. But there's a lot of Street Fighter characters that look very comic book-y rather than manga-y.
Yeah, Guile is definitely like a pastiche of, you know, a lot of like American tropes.
Or like Balrog, or Bison / Dictator, or Sagat, or Balrog. Like, the use of shading and proportions in Street Fighter characters feel a lot more Western.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, NetherRealms is heavily influenced by, you know, American comics, which is why they ended up making DC fighting games.
Yeah, heavily influenced by, like, American comics, a lot of, like, old slasher movies as well. Yeah,
pulp horror.
Yeah, pulp horror.
Kung fu movies. But Arc Systems Works has much more of an anime influence in terms of character designs. And, I mean, I feel like I can't really go into what that exactly means, because that's sort of a huge thing. But a few notes is that, like, characters tend to have less realistic proportions, but they're more exaggerated in a lot of ways. The outfits are less practical or realistic, and more outfits for the sake of being cool.
Yeah.
And notably, characters often have really extravagant powers or weapons.
Yeah.
A sort of big focus of their games is every character being unique, not just in terms of how they play, but like their moves, their aesthetic. They have like elemental attacks or big science-y weapons. They are known for a few series. So I mentioned that they made some anime tie-ins. They made the older JoJo's fighting games.
Yeah, which also kind of have a bit of a community of their own, because they look really interesting. But
famous classic Kusoge with such characters as Pet Shop, the banned character for being tiny and flying. Hokuto no Ken, the fighting game, Fist of the North Star, which we noted as another notable Kusoge due to the basketball combos. And recently, in the past decade, they made Dragon Ball FighterZ, which is the Dragon Ball Tag Fighter. Now, I want to also mention that anime fighters also carry a certain mechanical connotation to them, which is that they tend to have air blocking, better air movement than traditional fighters mostly do, and more air options in general. Usually they have more dedicated, like, run buttons, and they tend to have bursts. So, in Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, jumping is bad, usually.
Yeah.
Because it's much more of a choice of, like, a move you do.
Yeah, you have to commit to an entire jump quite heavily.
In anime fighters, you tend to be able to jump, block in midair, meaning that you can, you know, get hit by a move and you're not dead for jumping.
Yep.
You could air dash forward and back. Characters often have double jumps, which leads to a lot of air control already, even without other things going on. And a lot of anime fighters have a lot of other systems going on. It leads to sort of what some people will call air footsies, even. And this sort of gives it a much more mobile play style.
Yeah. May I present a theory real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to propose a triangle theory about fighting games. Essentially, and you can probably break this over your leg, you're almost certainly going to find a lot of examples that don't fit within this. I came up with this, like, just a few minutes ago. But I would like to propose that the extremes of this triangle are Street Fighter, Tekken and Super Smash Brothers. Tekken specifically because it is a 3D fighting arena game that has a lot of like stance-based combat and a lot more slower pace. Street Fighter because it is a very traditional 2D fighter, back and forthy, a lot of footsies, a lot of you know, kind of heavy committal, but also a lot of possibility for combos. And then Smash Bros because there's a lot of verticality mm-hmm. and platforming, and you know, it's definitely more of its own thing, but. I bring this up specifically to say that you could, if you accepted this, you could probably map like anime fighters to sort of like somewhere between Street Fighter and Smash. It is probably definitely more on the Street Fighter side, but it has a whole heavy influence on verticality. The whole of the stage is kind of very considered, and so. That's what I would like to present to the class here.
So I do not agree with that at all.
That's fair.
There's probably better ways to put it. Like you could say, what's the main directions you're going? Forward, back, left or right, or up and down. Street Fighter is forward, back. Tekken is left and right. Smash is up and down. Or you could say it is, not even a triangle where, like, being in one side removes your points in the other. It could be, like, one of those hex graphs where I have multiple, like, values. Like how EVs are in Pokemon.
Yeah.
So like
stand stat screens.
Yeah.
I almost said stand scat screens. That's gross. A different thing.
Yeah. This is a bad episode.
Yeah,
we keep bringing up the worst things. So, anyways, Arc Systems Works have had two long-running series. One of them is Blaze Blue, which has absolutely balls to the wall combos. Character designs are fucked up. Everyone has resources. But their main series they're known for is Guilty Gear.
Yes.
The Fact Corner.
Guilty Gear is a fighting game series that is sort of the brainchild of director, lead designer, lead composer, singer-songwriter, Daisuke Ishiwatari. Daisuke Ishiwatari loves metal. In Guilty Gear is a fighting game inspired by metal and the sort of rock community. It is an anime fighter where, for the most part, movement is much more safe and expressive. Every character has a unique weapon, and in general, characters are strong with strong options, big attacks, big movement, and a sort of rocket tag design mentality of giving everyone big, cool things they can do.
Yeah.
So when I say it's inspired by metal, I think the most obvious is the music. Throughout the entire run, the music has been very guitar focused with a lot of distortion. The metal drums are a big part. Daisuke himself sings in a lot of songs throughout the series.
Nice.
And he has a very sort of screamy style, which leads to just a very interesting soundtrack that's very listenable on its own without playing the video game even.
Yeah.
Also, I think a big part of it is the aesthetics and the graphic design, especially pre-Strive, especially Accent Core. Accent Core has like, it looks like an album cover if you look at just like the main screens. It has like this very grungy, metallic, dark, sort of obsidian almost, brimstone-y like backgrounds.
Yeah.
The artwork and the lettering is very reminiscent of like, I don't know, Metallica and metal groups as
Megadeth,
a whole.
Megadeth, like, yeah.
And a lot of characters have moves that are named after songs or artists. So this is like the whole range of music. So like the main character, Soul Bad Guy, his real name is Frederick, and his design and his name are based off Freddie Mercury. There's a character named Testament who has a move called Symphony of Destruction. Bridget has the move Kickstart My Heart. Kai has Ride the Lightning. Yeah.
Yeah. Sting like the guy, etc. Yeah. Unholy Diver.
Unholy Diver.
Yeah, is the famous example.
I'm surprised there's no Dio. or like there's the character Kuro Dabari Jam, who's named after the band Blackberry Jam.
Nice.
Yeah. ABBA is named after ABBA. It's great. It's so good. But also, a big part of Guilty Gear that is very metal is the way it treats people.
Yes.
So, okay, Guilty Gear characters. First, I need to explain something. Guilty Gear has become kind of infamous for its lore being convoluted and complex. It just has proper nouns that are interesting terms, but it's nothing too different from, like, Coheed and Cambria. Like, they have the front yard and the backyard, but that's just like the real world and the spirit world, essentially. Here's what you need to know. Here's Professor Twax, Professor Matthew Marissa's breakdown of Guilty Gear lore in 10 easy steps.
All right.
There were some scientists.
Okay.
Soul Bad Guy was one of them. They made the Gear Project.
All right, you've lost me. There's no way Soul Bad Guy was a fucking scientist. I've seen that man.
No, you haven't seen that man, who is a different character from Soul Bad Guy.
Damn it. Fucking Hideo Kojima-ass names.
Yeah, it's like, it's honestly easier to understand than most of Hideo Kojima's stuff.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right, I would say, on. Like, Metal Gear Solid 1, and then harder to understand is Guilty Gear, and then harder to understand is, like, MGS 2, and then Death Stranding.
Gotcha, of course.
So yeah, they made the Gears. The Gears are, like, hyper-android people, kind of like iRobots from Coheed and Cambria's The Amory Wars.
Okay.
There was a war between humans and Gears. Humans won. Gears mostly got wiped out. Technology just kind of worked differently. Like, I think it's, like, computers stopped working? Something like that.
Okay.
Technology was set back. I could be wrong about that part. Don't quote me on that one. Soul Bad Guy now roams the Earth fighting Gears. Because, spoiler alert, he is also a gear. He made himself a gear. There's
a
lot of...
turned myself into a gear.
Yes, I wasn't going to bring it up. Yeah. He turned himself into a gear, Morty. Okay.
Yeah,
there's really... a lot of other, like, storylines going on. That man is this weird guy who's, like, pulling strings behind the scenes to cause a fight, but I don't know if his... actual machinations are a thing. Johnny leads a band called the not a band, I guess a band of pirates called the Jellyfish Pirates. Chip is a bounty hunter. There's a few, like, assassins, like Eddie and Milia, and they all have weapons. Magic is only available, like, only Japanese people can use magic, but magic does exist. It's what fighting games tend to do, other than, like, Mortal Kombat, is they would just have each character's story be a sort of its own self-contained short story.
Yeah.
That would often intersect, but it was less about an entire concrete plot with a start and end point and scenes between, and more like a start and end point and then this big field of different character stories going on. And oftentimes, playing a character's arcade mode or story mode would end up just telling you more about the world and maybe not necessarily the main conflict. So, like, the Gear War is the main conflict early on throughout the series, but, like, characters don't have to participate in the Gear War or, like, have this huge function in it. It's just sort of, they're part of the world. They're important characters doing things.
A war is happening, but, like, you know, wars happen in real life and not everyone's in them, so...
Yeah, I'm not in a war right now. I think.
I'm in a Godzilla war for monsters.
Yeah, so that's the story of Guilty Gear, essentially. But what you need to know, though, is that while every character is sort of their own person, the characters are also very cool, and they're very inclusive and diverse. I think, like, diversity and inclusivity is a core part of the ideal metal experience.
Yes.
Metal, much like punk music, is one about counterculture, and that means that it's about sort of uniting outcasts, anybody who does not fit the mold, and thus, you know, minorities, people who are not considered part of the straight cis white class.
Yes.
You know, they are brought together in refuge there as one.
Yeah, I don't make a lot of explicit... what I'm about to say is I don't make a lot of, like, explicit statements about the history of various movements. We're very explicit about our general politics here on the show. But I do definitely want to say that, like, having, you know, learned and studied a bit of the history of, like, punk and a bit of it, metal as well, like, some other countercultures and stuff, essentially I would make the very strict argument that if you're not in it for all of it, you're not actually punk.
Yeah.
That, you know, leftists will always argue with each other, but if you're not willing to, if you look at a trans person and think that they're a problem, you're the problem, actually.
Yeah. And so Guilty Gear has representation. It's very good about that.
Yeah.
It has, you know, there's Venom, who's a gay guy. He doesn't have a shirt. It's great.
Nice.
Bridget is famously a trans girl, and Testament is non-binary. Testament's great. Goals. And so, like, Guilty Gear kind of blew up recently with the release of Guilty Gear Strive. I haven't even gone over the history. By the way, just want to note, the first Guilty Gear game released in 1998, which is the same year I was released.
God damn.
And there's been several installments since then. Of note is Guilty Gear 2 Overture, which is not a fighting game. It's like a weird RTS.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. You don't have to play Overture. But some of the main releases are Accent Core, which released, wow, that was like 2005? 2006 was Accent Core. Guilty Gear Xrd, which was the next major sort of change. You can think of it like individual games that have multiple versions. So Accent Core was a reversion of X2. And then XRD,
yep.
Was released 2014 or something like that. Sorry, the wiki is very bad. And then Strive was released in 2021, with Strive being the most recent system balance-wise and everything. And they've just been doing patches and DLC for it. So Strive was decently popular when it came out. It was, you know, the new Guilty Gear. It had a lot of momentum from that. It has absolutely beautiful animation. Arxis have some of the best animators in video games right now. And I don't think that's a controversial statement.
No, it really isn't. It's really good, yeah, animation.
They're wonders. They're wonderful at using 3D animation to have the same style of like 2D sprite work, but with all the flexibility of 3D animation.
Yeah, there is a specific style of 3D animation that like essentially conforms to 2D principles. It is all about where it is facing at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And while Strive does have obvious moments where like it you know, like it does the full 3D render for like super attacks and stuff, I would not be surprised, like, if you just tilted the camera, you know, 45 degrees, if a lot of the characters looked very silly because they're not, you know, they're not, like, posed for that angle. They are posed for the 2D plane.
That's sort of a good point. Fighting games, animation is so intrinsically tied to gameplay because it's all about readability. You need to see what's happening at a given moment, how the actual hitboxes and frame data translates to the visual experience, which then translates to your eyes and then to your brain, such that you can react to or, you know, think about what's happening. That requires animation that, like, matches the frame data. So if the startup is 4 frames, then you need to have a 4-frame startup animation.
Yeah.
But then also, like, the hitbox has to match the animation. And for games like Smash or Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, They tend to design characters' body to match the hitboxes.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of room for, like, squashing or stretching.
Yeah.
So when a move has to be bigger than the character, they have to use, like, particle effects, like fireballs, for example. And Street Fighter is kind of better with this. NetherRealm's kind of very infamously doesn't really maneuver or shift or morph their models.
They
just kind of skeletally bend them.
I've seen more than one video about how kind of bad NetherRealm's animation is in their game.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily my objective opinion, because I haven't played any of their games. But looking at them, yeah.
Yeah. And so the benefits of sprite artwork is that you can customize it per move to be exactly the right size and shape and have all the fun features of animation like squash and stretch and, you know, anticipation and recoil and all that.
Squash and stretch. That's what Dulcim does, I believe, yes.
Yeah. That's also another word for, like, Wario and Waluigi or Bob and Larry.
Ah, yep, yep.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. So
Squash and stretch would actually be a very good name for, like, a classic duo of,
yeah,
like, bad guys. Oh, one of them talks like this, and the other one talks like this.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, and so what Arxis does is they just do that in 3D.
Yeah. Basically, the game has good animation.
It looks good, and it feels good. And, yeah, so, like, I think there's a few moments to talk about when Strive blew up, though. This is sort of a big thing I've talked to my fighting game friends with, is, like, the Strive player base is so different from the rest of fighting game player bases. And this is going to sound very gatekeepy, and I know that, but there's a reason. It's that, like, Strive is so many people's first real fighting game, or, like, first traditional fighting game. I know so many Smash players that played Smash and then Strive.
Yeah.
To the point where Strive is the only traditional fighter at Riptide, the Smash major in, like, Ohio.
Yeah.
One of the biggest Smash exclusive and Plat Fighter exclusive majors. They have Smash, Rivals, Splatoon, and Strive. It's so wild to me that that's a thing.
That is very strange. But Splatoon, it's amazing to me that Splatoon isn't the weirdest one on that list.
But so, like, I mean, it's a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
But so, like, here's, I think, a few things. For one, Strive is, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It had that going since day one. Even people who, like, didn't play a lot of fighting games could at least talk about how good the animation was. Two, it is a very beginner-friendly game. I haven't touched on the mechanics of Guilty Gear games yet, and I will, but I just want to say Strive was kind of redesigned to be beginner-friendly. Three, Jacko.
Yep, Jacko.
Four, Testament.
Yeah.
Five, Bridget.
Yeah, this is 100% correct.
Yeah.
It is, it...
There is the character who became a, like, animation meme because of a horny pose.
Yeah.
And then they created the non-binary character and the trans character. And everyone was like, yes, we love inclusion. We love diversity. We love being represented.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really funny how, like, the progression of Strive almost kind of fits a state of the meme.
Yeah.
It's like it had... it had Jacko, and then Testament was really cool, but not necessarily a meme. Although Unholy Diver did come in with Testament, which is,
yeah,
still great. And then we had Brisket.
Yeah. It's also really funny. So I don't think... So here's a bit of a stretch, but I think NekoArk helped Strive.
Yeah.
Because people saw NekoArk, they looked up Melty Blood, and they were like, this game's okay. And then they saw Strive, which has a trans girl, and they were like, so I want to play a fighting game, and I like the one with the meme cat, but I don't like the rest of the characters, but Strive is cool.
Yeah. I 100% am going to submit this to the meme historians, because that is a theory that I think has a lot of, like, informal evidence.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, NekoArk posting helped to sort of boost, like, the vision of fighting games in general.
It's a rising tide.
Yeah, it's a rising tide that raises a lot of ships. And
it
Strive
goes,
and Strive being both a very good beginner friendly option and having just sort of, like, you know, hit after hit after hit, like, comes out and is a really good ship to jump onto.
I also want to mention that Strive is an equal opportunity sexy game.
Yes.
Like, I'm not kidding, the men are more, like, sexually drawn than the women in these games. In,
yeah,
all the Guilty Gear series.
Yeah, like, there is some debate on whether, like, sexualizing both is always, is, you know, always the best way. But, like, I would argue Strive is, like, example number one. I would be like, to be like, look, this game has both really sexy men, really sexy women, really sexy non-binary people, mm-hmm, and it also has, you know, like less sexualized men and less sexualized women.
Yeah, like May and Bridget and Faust.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I would put those three together for any particular reason. Maybe the first two.
Maybe the first two.
They're adorable. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but, like, yeah, it really does run an entire gambit of, like, Do you want to play sexy character? Do you want to play cool looking character? Do you want to play cool looking sexy character?
Do you want to play Potemkin?
Do you want to play Potemkin? Who is all three at the same time?
So, I want to get on my rant box here for a moment.
Oh, geez. Okay, just briefly. Yeah, all right. I'm going to head out, guys. See ya. I'll be back soon.
I knew you wouldn't leave me.
Yeah.
I need you to hold on to the box in case I trip.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I think it's really funny how Guilty Gear Strive is the opposite of Get Woke, Go Broke. It's Get Woke, Make More Money.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the most played fighting game on Steam for a long time, and it's still one of the biggest. It's really only not that big now because they literally just messed up the online. The net play is broken currently. But, like, so many people got into fighting games because they got woke, quote-unquote. And it's so funny seeing people complain about tourists.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is the alt-right dog whistle for trans people and, you know, gay and non-binary and queer people who play Guilty Gear as tourists.
Yeah.
Because, but, like, they play the games. They interact with the games. That's more than you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, they didn't care until there was a trans character. Okay, do you care about it? Did you care about it before this point at all?
I haven't even played the game, but now I won't buy it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to commit to boycotting this game I already wasn't going to buy.
Exactly.
I also, to very briefly hit on that point as well, I feel like a case study could be made as well about how this works, whereas, like, Strive worked where Nintendo didn't, no. Strive worked where, like, I don't know, Disney didn't, for example. Because, like, a lot of the characters, like, you know, Bridget coming out as trans, Testament being non-binary, a lot of the characters feel, like, very intentional, feel very, mm-hmm. like, there is a soul behind them. A soul bad guy, yes. If you will. But, like, it was really interesting. I did not actually know that, like, the director, I knew that he made the music. I didn't realize he was, like, essentially kind of the auteur, quote-unquote, like, heavier.
This is
quotes.
A auteur fighting game.
Yeah. I feel like that lends a certain amount of, you know, like, credence to, like, no, this isn't just, you know, early on with Bridget, people were trying to discredit, like, you know, in the original translation, and, you know, he had to come out and be like, no, she's trans. Idiots. Yeah. And so, yeah, That is a case study to be made at a later date, but I very much agree that this is the exact opposite of Get Woke, Go Broke. It is.
Yeah, it feels very genuine the way that Guilty Gear does it. Not just, like, the characters are well written, but, like, just the decision to make them be diverse this way feels like it comes from a place of earnest wanting to have a more inclusive experience,
yeah,
rather than just wanting it for publicity or making money.
Yeah.
Nobody is saying that Bridget is Guilty Gear's first trans girl character. They're just, you know, glad Bridget's in it.
Yeah. I also want to specifically shout out Gold Lewis, who is a really good fat representation.
Yeah.
He's also someone I specifically want to get good at because he's the coolest motherfucker in the game.
He does not have an alien on his back. That's just a coffin he took from Area 51.
Don't worry about it.
It's not an alien.
It isn't an alien.
He's the president
of
the
United States. He's the president of the United
States. Wait, no,
he's
not the president. He's the Secretary of Absolute Defense, which, by the way, is SOAD. He is a System of a Down reference, which is kind of fucked up when you think about it, that the American Secretary of Defense is a System of a Down reference, but,
that's really,
you know,
funny.
I'm just gonna say Daisuke gets a pass.
Yeah.
Sorry, Serge. You wanna come on and talk about Guilty Gear? Serge, not Daisuke?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, put that on the canon. I was literally talking about this earlier of, like, we gotta have an actual list. We got Banksy to talk about Mark Echo's Getting Up. I believe we had the person who made Yume Nikki for, like, Undertale or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So okay, we've talked so much about the history of Guilty Gear, the world of it, the sort of community. I haven't talked about the game at all.
Yep.
So, I mentioned that it's air dash focused. There's a lot of air movement. In Exord and previous games, air dashing was pretty much instantaneous. In Strive, they added sort of a startup to air dash, which I've heard was to help with rollback implementation, but also it does mean you can kind of react to air dashes better.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. It looks like the characters create a wall behind them that they then jump off of.
Yeah, it's a neat little thing of it looks really fun, but it's also a really neat little, like, you know, immediate thing of like, hey, I'm doing an air dodge.
It's also worth noting that aerial backdash does not have that startup, but it generally moves less far.
Mm.
So the defense option is faster, but not as effective for movement. There's a few sort of core mechanics throughout the Guilty Gear games that have been consistent. The first is the actual button layout. There's P, K, S, H, and D. Punch, kick, slash, heavy slash, and dust. Punch is your jab, your quick move, very fast, very physical. Most characters have fast punches. In forward punch, in Exerd and Strive, I'm not sure about in previous games before those, is an anti-air. A universal anti-air.
Yeah, usually an overhead, if I remember correctly.
No.
No.
Just an anti-air.
Just an anti-air.
It has invulnerability from jumping attacks, some head invuln. Kicks are a little faster. They're usually a bit more of like a mid-range poke for some characters. Sometimes they're just sort of filler in links and chains and gatlings. I'll explain what those are in a second. And then slash and heavy slash are the buttons that use your weapon. Usually slash is your main poke slash combo option, and most characters have close slashes and far slashes, where depending on how close you are to the opponent, it either does close slash, which is usually better in block strings or in combos, or far slash, which is usually better farther away.
Yeah.
Context sensitive. For example, in Strive, Soul Bad Guy's close slash has a very weird recovery data on it. That means that it often trips people up if they're trying to, like, mash out of defense. You can usually do the close slash and then do, like, a punch to counter hit them. Whereas if you're far away, it just swings his, like, lighter sword, which, you know, is a decent move at filling up space. Heavy slash is weird. Some characters, it's, like, unique actions that are awkward. Oftentimes, if characters have a, like, command overhead, it's on this button. Some characters, it just does something completely different. A big example is Bridget in Accent Core. She doesn't work like this in Strive, but in Accent Core, the heavy slash button would throw her yo-yo, and then it would stay there, and then all of her specials interacted with the yo-yo based on its position.
Ah, this is the Y button in Kianta. This is the sort of like...
Sort of, but not really.
Mm.
In that, like... It's sometimes just a normal button. Like, Soul's heavy slashes are pretty much just more buttons that are a bit slower, have worse recovery, but are stronger. Maybe they have, like, better combo tools. They're usually good round start options. But they're not things you often throw out in neutral.
Yeah.
But some characters, they are. They tend to just be the ones that have weirder properties. And then Dust is the universal low and universal overhead option. Crouching Dust is a low attack. Every character has this. And then if you stand still and hold Dust, well, if you tap Dust, it's just an overhead. That's kind of slow startup, but in return, everybody has it. If you hold it, you charge up Dust, which lets you either, like, slam the opponent into the wall so you can hit them a bunch, or it knocks them into the air where you can do an air combo.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it's like a cinematic thing when you charge Dust all the way. Where it's not always beneficial, and it's not usually better than a normal combo, but it's sort of guaranteed damage most of the time. Then there's a few other main mechanics. There's Burst. Bursting is huge in anime fighters. Anime fighters have a reputation for having long combos. Burst is a defensive option that says, I want out of this now.
Yeah.
You do a big explosion around you. If it hits the opponent... then, you know, the opponent's knocked out. You can do it while you're being hit. If you don't do it while you're being hit, if you do it while you're just in normal, you know, whatever state, you do Gold Burst, which gives you meter when you hit the opponent. Otherwise, you can use it to escape combos. A big part of the meta of Guilty Gear is baiting out bursts. Either doing combos where you can end it early if you see the opponent burst, or just, like, ending your combo early, making the opponent burst, and then hitting them afterwards.
Yeah.
It's a built-in sort of game of rock, paper, chicken.
it is a reversal button, and so the metagame, as it were, is kind of about trying to get into the headspace of your opponent to be like, can they use burst? They're going to use burst now,
yeah.
So I can, you know, let them waste it and then continue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, they didn't use burst then, and now I'm being punched. Well, I'm going to use burst.
But you can usually only do one burst per round. There's also faultless defense, where you hold any two buttons while blocking. And this is, so there's chip damage in most fighting games, where getting hit by certain moves while you're blocking will still do a tiny bit of damage. This is to prevent players from just holding block the entire game.
Yep.
Because otherwise you could do that and, you know, just stall out the timer and get a draw. In Guilty Gear, you can circumvent chip damage by holding two buttons, but it drains your meter while you use it. So you have to be very intentional with when you actually use faultless defense.
Yeah.
Some characters have weird things they can do with it. Like, you can use it to sort of air brake. Like, if you're air dashing, a lot of times you can press faultless defense to stop your air dash movement forward.
Interesting.
The properties change in different games with different characters. Some characters have even more weird things, like Bridget, for example, in Accent Core. She has a move where she spins and, like, slowly moves towards the yo-yo. And normally it stops the moment you reach the yo-yo and then you fall down. But if you faultless defense, you can cancel it early, which means if you throw the yo-yo straight up, spin to it, and then faultless defense before you hit it, you go way past the yo-yo. So that's really funny. Now, there is one mechanic that I think Guilty Gear is most well-known for. And it's sort of a huge thing that a lot of other fighting games include. Guilty Gear was the first to really do it, but it's become sort of a staple in so many other fighting games. And that is the Roman Cancel. No, I don't know why it's called a Roman Cancel. Maybe it was made by a guy named Roman.
Maybe the director was thinking about it when he was just kind of ambling around.
Yeah. But so, the way this works is you spend a meter to cancel what you're doing. Whatever you're doing, you stop it. There's a few different versions, and the exact versions depend on the game. Usually there's at least Roman canceling, where when you're blocking, you can Roman cancel to slow down time. So like if your opponent's got a really tricky mix-up that's hard to block, you can spend 50 meter to slow down time so you can maybe block it, or just comprehend the situation. But the most common one is Roman canceling while you're doing a move, which stops you doing the move, and usually it means you're active immediately to do something else. It cancels whatever rest of the move goes on, and you're suddenly back to, you know, normal, active, able to do whatever.
Yeah.
This is a very flexible mechanic. It's a very elegant one in that it is pretty simple to explain, spend 50 meter to stop whatever you're doing, but it has huge consequences, and so much of the metagame and the, like, theory and people developing strategies for Guilty Gear games comes from Roman canceling. For example, Sol has a move called Gunflame, where he stabs his sword into the ground and, like, three or five pillars of flame come up from the ground. This is sort of a multi-hit projectile that takes up space, pretty good, knocks people off the ground, OTG, meaning it hits people that are on the ground and you can pick them up and still hit them.
Yep.
But you're active pretty much the whole time. You have to stand still even after the projectiles come out for quite a long time.
It has a long wind down.
You're in recovery for a long time.
Yeah.
But if you Roman cancel it, the projectiles will still come out, but you're able to move. So you can gunflame, Roman cancel, run forward or air dash forward to start, aggressively attacking. You can gunflame, Roman cancel, and then if your opponent tried to jump over the gunflame, you can react to that with like an anti-air. You can knock somebody down, gunflame, and then they have to block the flames from the gunflame while they're getting up. So you can do your other attacks and mix-ups. Or, like, you gunflame, your opponent's already about to hit you. You can go, oh shit, and suddenly you're blocking the attack.
Yeah.
Those are just some of the options you can do for one move. And every character has so many little things like this.
Yeah.
It is a real playground of options you get. I want to talk about some technical stuff, some terminology we haven't really brought up. I'm surprised I went the whole episode without using numpad terminology.
Yeah, numpad terminology is a lot less complicated than you think it is once you realize that most of the time it's ultimately going to be things just like quarter circles.
Yeah, so here's what you do. Does your computer have a numpad? Look at the numpad.
Go on.
Imagine if all the numbers were arrows pointing outwards from the center, except 5, which is just the center. Now, those arrows represent the directions that your control stick could move in. That's numpad notation.
Yep.
So, different fighting game communities have different ways of talking about inputs. Just like how chess players have their own sort of chess language of like, you know, knight e6, e4, you know, queen f7.
Yeah.
In like Street Fighter players, they tend to have like quarter circle forward fierce or quarter circle back roundhouse, where each button has its own nickname. In games like Tekken, they have numbers for each input, so like 1, 2, and 3 are buttons instead of directions. In Smash, they have, you know, forward tilt, back tilt, up tilt, down tilt. In anime fighters and a lot of other fighters, they use numpad notation. And that's the main notation you'll see online. So 2, 3, 6 is quarter circle forward. 6 plus a button is just forward in that button. If you see like 6, 3, 2, 1, 4, that's a half circle back. Usually you don't see 7, 8, 9. People will still say like jumping 4 or J4.
Yeah.
Or JA rather, JP, JK, what have you.
I want to also specifically note that this notation is essentially, it is relative to where you are facing, and it assumes that you are on the left of the screen and your opponent is on the right.
Yeah.
So when we say 2, 3, I say we, when you say
2, 3, 6, H,
it assumes you are on the left side of the screen and you can do a quarter circle towards your opponent.
Yeah.
That's just a note that you want to keep in mind. But like, what, again, once you have that idea, it's really easy to just kind of internalize that and be like, ah, that means quarter circle towards the opponent.
Yeah, so like Gunflame is quarter circle forward punch. That's 2, 3, 6, P. And even if you're on the player 2 side and you're facing to the left, you would still call it 2, 3, 6, P. The other thing I want to talk about is a term that I've heard some people kind of get annoyed with, but it's generally a term accepted by the whole community, which is Okizeme. So
isn't that song about Mega Man?
Yeah, about Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
And drifting away from friends.
Yeah.
And how sad it is to know that other people have grown up, even though you used to hang out with them all the time.
Yeah, a beautiful dirge of a piece that's straining the creator's vocal cords.
Mm-hmm. It's about Ultraman as well.
Nice.
But so, say you get knocked down in a fighting game. Somebody does a sweep. What happens afterwards? Okizeme is what the attacker does to the person who is getting up from the ground. In some games, this is pretty simple. Street Fighter Okizeme tends to be jump up and do an aerial move, like a aerial heavy hard kick, where it hits the opponent as they are standing up, and then you land and you're still free to attack. You're active before they are. Or it might be just throwing a fireball while they're getting up so that they block the fireball. They can't immediately move or do an attack.
Yeah.
Anime fighters kind of typically have a huge focus on Okizeme. And so, like, in Guilty Gear, the thing I mentioned where you can use Gunflame, and then when the opponent gets up, they have to block it, that is an Okizeme setup. And when people talk about a character's ability to do Okizeme, or their options, they call it Oki.
Mm.
You'll hear this a lot in Guilty Gear. Every character has Oki. Milia, her Oki is she sets up the spinny disc move, and then she air dashes forward and back, and you don't know which side she's going to be on. Faust Oki is he throws a bunch of items up, and one of them might be really good. Potemkin Oki is he's just going to pot buster you again. Jump the pot buster. Oops, he did the anti-air command grab. You idiot. He thought he was going to pot buster. And some characters have, like, more of an Oki focus, an Oki Foki. Like, some characters, like Axel. Axel's this huge long-range zoner with a scythe. He also is based off of Billy from King of Fighters. Like, he's pretty much just one-for-one Billy from King of Fighters.
Yeah.
But Axel has this big sickle that he can swing from the full screen. But he doesn't tend to have, like, fantastic Oki. because he has this full screen potential. And then you have a character like Ino, who has some full screen potential, but has ridiculous Oki, because her full screen capabilities are generally for the purpose of getting her in against other opponents. And then once they're in, once she's in, she like has all these setups to like command grab people or do hits. Another term you'll hear is meaty, which is when an attack is started while the opponent's knocked down and unable to move, but it's active when they get back up.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm pretty sure Sol has a lot of meaty options where, like, you have to block when you're standing up because they've already started an attack. Some characters have great meaty options, but they don't have great, like, setup Oki. There are some characters who have ridiculous Oki. Like, in Exert, I play Heyun, who I've talked about on previous episodes, and his Oki is nuts because he creates this ball that stands there for, like, four hits, and you can move it left and right. So his whole game plan is, like, very patiently wait for the opponent to mess up, knock them down, and then get them in the Oki blender, where, like, you put the ball on the other side of them, and then you do, like, three mix-ups, and then if none of them hit, then you also have a DP you can use. But like, in Street Fighter, very few characters are strictly Oki-focused. A lot of them have it as options, but it's usually, like, just in the form of meaties. Meaty jumping attacks, meaty, you know, punches or what have you. Whereas in anime fighters, you will have characters who put, like, three things on the screen that then will, like, hurt the opponent or give you options. And they have so many wacky Oki setups, but everyone has it.
Yeah.
Like, there's this guy named Answer in Exert. He is a ninja who's talking on his phone. He's like the secretary of another character.
He's the secretary of the Secretary of Absolute Defense.
No, sadly.
Damn.
But his thing is that he puts these scrolls up that he can like jump between. And it means that from those scrolls, he can jump to another scroll. He can do an overhead. He can do a low, or he can do a command grab. Or he could just leave. He could fake it out. He could do nothing, wait for you to do something, and then punish you. He is not... He's like one of the worst characters in Exert. Everybody has stuff like that. That's just the whole game is people with fucked up Oki.
Yeah.
And that's part of why people love it, is like... I said Rocket Tag earlier. Rocket Tag generally refers to Quake and Doom in Unreal Tournament and the idea of like... A game where your momentum is so fast and your attacks are so strong, but since every player has those options, it's balanced.
Yeah.
It is sort of power fantasy, but both players have the same power level, and it's high power level.
Yeah. It's
like Dota, competitive EDH, and Guilty Gear in similar anime fighters like BlazBlue are very much the Rocket Tag of fighting games.
If everyone has enhanced lethality, then everything balances out.
Yeah, when everyone's super. And I think that's really the anime fighter crux, is it's not just that it's like anime characters with big weapons and powers. Like, again, the reason why Slash and Heavy Slash are buttons is because everyone has a unique weapon. But it's also that the fights look like anime fights.
Yeah.
They're bombastic, they're super powered, they're all over the place, they're in the air, they're on the ground, they're in the air again.
There's a bunch of explosions, there's a bunch of fire.
There's ninjas.
This woman has hair as a blade.
Yeah, she can turn her blade into a weapon, and she's not the only character in fighting games that can do that.
Potemkin is there. Everyone is here. Where's Potemkin?
Sex is like Mario Kart. It's hard to finish first, and Wario is there. That's gonna do it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed Fighting Game Pro.
Yeah, I'm really happy you brought up the rear there. I was really worried that I was going to be the only one to really be saying embarrassing things this entire time. So, you know, it's really nice
We've had a rising tide. Now every ship is sinking. Help us. The tide's too high.
The joke, I had a joke I was workshopping earlier, which was, yeah, there's Slash and Heavy Slash, but there's no Light Slash. That's Slash fiction. So, thank you very much for tuning in for Fighting Game Prol.
Yeah, I hope it was informative.
I hope you had fun. I know I did.
Play fighting games. They're cool.
Yeah, play fighting games.
So many fighting games.
This was an experiment in sort of being like, hey, fighting games. What are they like for someone who doesn't necessarily get into fighting games?
We've barely scratched the surface.
Yeah. And, like, I did not speak on a lot of the mechanics because obviously I didn't know a lot of the specific ones. It's been a difficult while.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a difficult while, which is why fighting Gabriel became into fighting Mapril. But we did play a good couple of times, and like very easily, I could see a lot of the skills and stuff transferring over. It's once you get into a mindset that is not like exceptionally difficult to get into, it really just becomes a game of options. It becomes mm-hmm. a game of, you know, quick versus strong, you know, big bombastic versus, you know, safer. And so it's like, I had a lot of fun. I found like five different characters that I was individually like, this seems fun and I kind of want to develop this.
And part of why we ended with Strive is because I really wanted to highlight the community aspect of fighting games.
Yes.
Part of what I love about fighting games is that I can hang out with friends, make new friends, travel to places for these big tournaments and hang out and go to arcades and eat food from local restaurants and, you know, just have a really good time with friends I've made because of some video games.
Yeah.
The fighting game community is much more than just one or two fighting games. And I almost feel like I was doing it wrong when I just played fighting games and didn't interact with the community. Not that that is wrong. You could just play Netplay by yourself and that's fine. That's okay. You can do that if you want. But I genuinely love the community around fighting games.
Yeah. Yeah. We have both met a lot of cool people. Myself mostly through you because mm-hmm. you have met a lot of cool people and I hang out with you a lot. And so, yeah, it's there has never been a better time to get into fighting games is how I would put it. Like a lot of the sort of preconceived notions and barriers have really kind of been, you know, stripped down and it's been getting a lot better and a lot easier and a lot more beginner friendly. It's, you know, a lot of people are very willing to help newer players. And so, yeah, this play fighting games.
And don't forget, you can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you'd be interested in hearing us talk about. Or if there's something you think we should check out ourselves on our own time, then let us know. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro, where we tweet out teasers on upcoming episodes. New teasers should be going up soon for the next slew of episodes. You can follow me on Twitter at Twakaroo, TWAKAROO, where I tweet out things like stuff about games I'm playing, takes, sometimes funny stuff, but mainly updates on my projects and when I go live on my stream. I stream on twitch.tv/twak. twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream most weekdays at about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time, give or take. I stream competitive games, roguelites, some single-player games, a lot of GameCube games. However, recently, this month, I have been streaming Mega Man. I am playing through Mega Man 1 through 11 and X through X6. In order to raise money for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. I've done charity streams for them a few times by now, and I'm always glad to help out with that. And if people donate enough money for my fundraiser, I'll add more games to the schedule, including things like Street Fighter X Mega Man, Mega Mari, and if I raise enough money, Mighty No. 9. So if that interests you, check that out.
As for myself, you can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWLS0N. I post my hot takes and a lot of, you know, videos about my thoughts on things. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I say this every episode. I think I will actually be streaming soon.
Good luck.
So, with that, thank you very much. And I hope you have a good day.